I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. Thank you for being here. This is the second installment of our important conversation series. The first conversation was on the topic of suicide and suicide prevention. Really, the goal of this series is to address very difficult topics in our community, in our society, and open them up for public consumption. Because what we're seeing right now, instead of actually breaking down an issue, talking about it in a sober way, we're hearing this screaming everywhere. We're seeing it on social media. It's not productive. It doesn't help anybody. So this goal and this endeavor is to take on these difficult topics and hear from experts, objectively hear what is happening, why it's happening, and like I said, to open them up for serious discussion. So today we are discussing attacks on journalism in the fake news era. And we have some great speakers here. Thank you all for attending. Elmer Plotz, formerly of the Buffalo News, currently at SUNY Fredonia, the department chair, teaches television production and journalism. Correct?
I teach journalism, and I'm not the department chair.
Oh, someone already hit me with fake news.
It was a test.
Well, thank you for being here, Elmer. Mike Igo, formerly of WGRZ, currently at SUNY Fredonia. I don't want to give you a title that isn't accurate.
I'm an assistant professor.
Okay, assistant professor at SUNY Fredonia. Anne Marie Franchuk, formerly of Business First, currently at Buffalo State College.
That's right.
And Felice Krejcha, formerly of the Hamburg Sun, correspondent reporter for the Buffalo News and editor of the Gowanda News. Correct. All right, we got it all. And currently working in the Erie County Department of Veterans Affairs as well. All right, thank you. So if I'm just going to give you all a brief introduction, but I kind of want to explain the structure of the discussion. So I've already explained sort of the goal of the series, but when we're saying, you know, attacks on journalism and fake news, we all kind of know what we're talking about, but I want to break it down really into three parts. So the first part is really the attack on the truth, the consistent attack on the truth, the smokescreen of what the truth is and how that breaks down in our society. Second would be the actual attack on journalism and journalists. We've seen obviously physical attacks, but also the political attacks. Maybe now more than ever, obviously, that journalism and journalists have been pulled into the political sphere as an influencer. Obviously, they have always been influencers over public thought, but now it is really, they are treated now as an actor in politics. And then third is really the business model of media and media bias. So where that actually exists, and how it influences public discussion. So with that, and after that, if you can introduce yourselves, sort of give your brief thoughts on the world we're living in today on this subject, and then we'll take audience questions. We've been taking in questions from the public for about 2 weeks now on this subject. They were overwhelmingly from the, I would say, pro-Trump position, anti-media position, which is not surprising given the topic. But we tried to sort of whittle that down so we weren't just repeating the same questions over and over. I've sort of taken three that I think cover the base of most of those questions. And then we do have one person here who I think wanted to ask a question on the role of media. So Mike, if you can start and just tell us a little bit about yourselves and your position and your views on the subject.
Yes, Legislator Burke, thank you for the opportunity. For those of you who don't know anything about my background, I was a television consumer reporter for 30 years, 20 of which were spent at Channel 2. Now I've evolved into a scholarly professor. And, you know, media ethics are something I feel very strongly about, not just because I worked in the business, but also my job, obviously, is to train the next generation of journalists. And, in fact, that training involves not just students in the United States. I've been at SUNY Fredonia for 5 years, but I've also taught overseas. I was in China for 3 years. And under a variety of programs, such as the U.S. Fulbright, the SUNY Global Fellowship, and the SUSTEC program, I've taught in China, Tibet, Hong Kong, and Turkey. So, you know, in a lot of schools, unfortunately, the textbooks very often have media ethics at the end. Well, I start right off, because it's my theory that's the basis of where you got to start. You know, nowadays, social media is certainly, the industry has changed quite a bit since I left 9 years ago. I took a buyout from the media, and I became a scholarly professor at that time. But the big thing now is, of course, is that people have more access to the media, both in terms of platforms, both in terms of technology. So the good thing is just about anybody can be a journalist. The bad thing is that just about anybody can be a journalist as well. And that's the thing. Even nowadays, I think a lot of people get confused about what actually is the media anymore. And that's kind of hard to define as well. Because if you think about it, as I mentioned, just about anybody can be a journalist. And even Congress itself, many years ago, during the time of the Shield Laws, they wrestled with what exactly is a journalist. The Shield Laws, of course, were designed to protect confidential sources. And Congress tried to come up with a definition of what is a journalist to see who could get the protection of their confidential sources, and nobody could agree about it. And it kind of died on the vine, and then Obamacare came along, and that was the end of it. And I seriously doubt that our current president has any interest in protecting journalists or journalists' sources. So one of the things that's happening now, I see, because journalism is just about anything, I think the average public is kind of confused about what is real and what is not real. And consequently, I think even intelligent people do get fooled. One of my Facebook colleagues, who's a very intelligent person and has some worldly smarts, got fooled by something a while back involving Vice President Pence. You might remember about a year ago, there was the March on Washington, where a lot of women came out for various causes. Well, one of these supposed news sources said that Mike Pence supposedly said, "Why are these women out marching on Washington? They should be home cooking and cleaning for their husbands." And of course, it was bogus. But my Facebook friend got outraged. She goes, "How can that man say that?" And then I politely pointed out to her that the source was The Onion, which is a website for parody and satire. And she finally embraced it. But that's exactly the problem nowadays, is that a lot of people just can't really distinguish what's right and what's real. I'm going to talk a little bit about my suggestions from a legislative point of view later on. Also, another thing is, as the industry has changed, the idea of what is journalism has also changed. The Fox News Network in particular has gotten very big on opinion-based journalism. Well, true journalism, at least what I teach and what I grew up thinking when I was a member of the media, was you're not supposed to have an opinion. It's supposed to be based on just the facts, let the viewers decide what's what. But Fox, of course, is pretty much opinion-based journalism, and as we have people like Bill O'Reilly, who's left now, screaming at us, "Shut up, shut up, shut up," and wants to share his opinion, and Fox has done very well. So consequently, ratings drive the business quite a bit, so monkey see, monkey do, and everyone else has gotten into opinion-based journalism. But that's not what journalism is all about. It's supposed to be present the facts, let people decide on their own. But a lot of the journalism and the pseudo-journalism now, and many things in social media, let's face it, especially Facebook, is opinion-based journalism. Someone has an opinion, and that starts the discussion of what's what. So ratings drive the engine on the media, and as such it's been successful on opinion-based journalism, that's exactly what's happened. You know, another thing, in an effort to connect with their audiences, the media has talked a lot about what's trending now. I think just about every newscast I watch at night talks about what's trending now. Very often it's something like a viral video, so we get to see things like some squirrel water skiing, or some guy who thought it was a good idea to use the fireworks to pretend like it was his manhood. And if you saw the rest of that video, you saw it was a pretty stupid idea. But that's a lot of things that the people want to see. And in an effort to be relevant, as the media corporations lose their share of the audience, and we've seen many, many things of media cutbacks. In fact, just yesterday, the Daily News announced that they were getting rid of about half of their news staff. And that happened in the Buffalo News. A few months back, they had a major turnover, too. So the idea of what involves journalism has changed. And even the people themselves, they talk about careless journalism. Well, As you cut back and you have fewer and fewer people doing the same amount of work, the opportunity for carelessness is there. I don't think there's a lot of people who are purposely doing fake news or doing incorrect news, but when you have people doing too many things, the opportunity for mistakes can and will happen. And I've seen that many, many times. Especially nowadays, the young people hired in the business. When I started in television journalism in 1980, how the years go by. Anyway, I was basically a reporter. I did a lot of research and everything, but nowadays the young people, they report, they shoot, they edit, they do all the social media, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, the station's website, relationships with radio stations, and whatnot. So the opportunity for errors can and will happen. And again, people nowadays don't even know who the media is anymore, because especially as the young people who are pretty much working very hard, they come and they go, because who can blame them? They go on to a new job with better pay and whatnot. So people don't even know who's some of their media people on the air. And as they come and go, they see what happens. But one of the things I would like to share is, and this is where I encourage you folks to get involved. I know the county legislatures, they do a lot of public awareness things. You send out postcards, you have websites talking about the latest recycling drive for electronic recycling and whatnot. But I think one of the things you legislators can do is get out the word. In many ways, people can figure out what's the real deal and what's fake news. There are many, many sources. You know, the good thing about having access to media nowadays, there is the opportunity for people to question things and actually have some power. You know, years ago, the media was very select and the published did not have, you know, much access other than maybe letters to the editor. Nowadays, as there's so much media, the piece of the pie has shrunk. Consequently, well, for example, in my home, I have 2,000 stations on my cable and there's still nothing on TV. But the point is, all in all, these media outlets are competing for the same pie. And what was acceptable as far as ratings is much less compared to what it was. When I was a young reporter in the 1980s, we had a 50 share of the audience. That will never happen nowadays because there's so much more media and people have so many other places they can go. So here's what I recommend. I recommend that people either do it themselves or perhaps the legislatures can get out the word. There are many, many sources of things you can either check on fake news, or you can make your voice heard. One of them is the Google reverse images. I've used that many times. I remember there was a famous picture of Donald Trump supposedly rescuing the victims of the Houston floods. And if you do a Google reverse image, it takes you back to the original source of the image and shows you what it was. And of course, it wasn't Donald Trump in a full business suit helping someone in a rowboat get out of the Houston floods. It was someone else. But someone else had doctored it. But of course, some people believed it. And there are many, many other sources, Snopes, ProPublica, Frontline, First Information, Hoaxy, there's many, many more. So I encourage you legislatures to do get out the word to people that they do have the opportunity, not only to check on stuff, but also to make their voice heard. Because we mentioned before that a lot of people are very interested in what's trending now, what people are interested in, and I think voices are being heard because the media in general does not want to lose that first and small part of the audience they had very much. So that's my mission for the county legislators. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Potts, if you could share your position on this issue.
Okay, thank you, Legislator Burke. And one of the things I've learned today is never follow a broadcast journalist when you're a print guy. But I will try nonetheless. My background is I spent 23 years with the Buffalo News, 27 years in print journalism, and for the past 10 years I've been teaching journalism at Fredonia. And as a professor at SUNY Fredonia, I teach fledgling journalists about the craft of news reporting and the importance of integrity. In journalism, you're only as good as your word. And as somebody who's spent 27 years in journalism, I can tell you that I've rarely met anybody who purposely slanted their stories. In fact, if anybody tries to tell a journalist what to report, they're probably going to find out that there's no more sure way of getting the exact opposite result. Herding cats is probably a good metaphor for directing journalists. Just ask an editor, and you'll find out. And that's why it's so disappointing to hear people, including the current president, trying to undercut trust in the mainstream news media, calling them the enemy of the people as they do the reporting. And it doesn't end there. It extends to the local levels, and it has caused problems. I mean, just the regard of the media. The media in the past, for better or worse, was able to be an outside observer in a way that it probably never will be again. You have a subject of a story who ends up killing multiple people in Annapolis because he was unhappy with his news coverage. You had a disgruntled employee in Virginia killing two people on air. And even locally, Channel 4 had a news team attacked in Niagara Falls while they were up reporting a feature story at the Art Alley. And so the way people in general look at reporters when they are out there has changed, and not in a good way. I do think most of the reporters and photographers are simply trying to do their job. I wish I could offer a solution to help solve the problem. Probably a beginning might be to show a little bit more respect or understanding. Reporters might do that as well. Probably every elected official has been unhappy with the news media at some point or other. I'm sure you haven't been, but
sure.
Most probably have been. And yes, mistakes do get made. We're all human, and journalists work under some pretty intense deadlines. Now, the 11 o'clock news comes, and you've got to be on the air. The 9:30 deadline to get the first pages off the floor comes, and you got to get it to them. And with the cutting down in numbers of copy editors, mistakes get made. But they are not intentional mistakes. And so when you see a mistake like that, you know, not taking it personally, and I think perhaps encouraging people not to give up on the media and to actually communicate with them. From my experience, when people actually know a reporter or know somebody in the media, they tend to be more understanding. I grew up out in Cattaraugus County, and my next-door neighbor was a dairy farmer who was interviewed by Sheila Murphy one time for a news story, and after that, he swore by everything she had to report on anything. And he might have disagreed, at the very least, it gave him an insight into what it was like to be reported and the fact that he felt that she represented what he had to say fairly. And unfortunately, as the news media shrinks because of financial cutbacks, and I do think that's probably coming to TV as it has in many respects already to print journalism, there are going to be few reporters out there, and it's going to be important to try to establish those connections between the media and the public. I'm not sure that there's anything you can do to help with that, but that's what the media companies and the public need to do. And to remind everybody that we're all humans. So those are some of the basic things. Oh, one last thing that maybe legislative action could help with is protecting people, and not just journalists, but coming up with ways to protect people from social media harassment, because that is one place where journalists are frequently out there. They're encouraged by their employers to put together social media accounts and to interact with the public. And then quite often they end up being harassed, particularly women reporters face a lot of harassment online. I've seen a lot written about it. I've talked to ones who have experienced it. And the media outlets themselves should probably be emphasizing transparency as much as possible. Unnamed sources may be necessary for some stories, especially if your name is Seymour Hersh and you're reporting on Abu Ghraib. But trying to stay away from unnamed sources, trying to be as transparent as possible, and everybody needs to take some steps toward that. And probably trying to stay away from the my side, your side kind of approach to everything in politics. We seem as a society to have reached that point where people tend to believe what's in their echo chamber and not what's in the other echo chamber. And somewhere, hopefully, there is a middle ground where people can meet and maybe minds can be changed and compromises can be reached. But the media, like politics itself, is sort of caught in a bind right there, right now. Okay. And we'll throw it back to you with that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Potts. All right. Ms. Krychev?
Well, I'm not a teacher. And I grew up with journalism. My father was a newspaper man, so all my life I was exposed to the whole newspaper business. We moved here in the late 50s when my father got hired to work at the Courier Express. And he worked there until it folded, and he went on to work at the News, and he was working there when he died. So I grew up in a whole journalism lifestyle, and I followed my father's footsteps and went into print media. I was going to college at Michigan State. It's on. It's got the little equipment failure. But so I grew up, like I said, I grew up with newspapers all my life, and we actually, even from our household, we ran a German-English newspaper. It was my father's slogan was bilingual, bi-weekly, by golly, it's great. Yeah. And if you knew my father, you would know that that's exactly the kind of stuff he would say. I was brought up to realize that the history of journalism is fraught with journalists being attacked, have always been attacked. And this dates back to pre-revolutionary days when people did not like what the reporters or the newspapers were printing. And at that point, they were like broadsheets. People always say to me, you're supposed to be unbiased. Unless you're a robot, you have biases. You have to be aware of what your bias is and take steps to counteract that and balance that. For media to work correctly, it has to be fair. That's the main thrust of what I'm sure the schools are teaching the students at this point. It was taught to me both at Michigan State and Buff State and by my father. You have to give both sides an equal chance to represent their side of the story. Otherwise, you do a disservice to everybody involved. What's happening is what I see is that people are not taking the time to go and do that, to get the balanced story. And I understand that with the deadlines and things like that, and I never wanted to work really for a big daily paper because that's what I grew up with. So I went the weekly way because I wanted to have more time to write a more in-depth story and to take my time to be able to get both sides of that particular, whatever it was that I was writing about. What, like I said today, everybody, it's a knee-jerk reaction. It seems like people write things on the social media. They don't have to check their sources. They don't wait to get the other side. You see that with reports that happen to our different legislators, to the controller, to the county exec, to everybody. Everybody just writes what they think, and very few people are actually taking the time to back it up. And there's always this thought that we could run a correction later. My father always used to stress, you may touch 10,000 people with your original story, and if you have a correction, you only may get 1,000 of those people to read the correction, which is buried somewhere else in the newspaper, or they didn't have the TV on or the radio on when that correction came through. It was always stressed, make sure it's right the first time. I don't think that's happening a lot now. I think they just, I got it, I'm writing it, I'm putting it out there. If it's wrong, we'll fix it later. And I see this all the time. I read stuff, I hear stuff, and it's like, this can't be right, and sure enough, it isn't. That's your false news. That's whether it's false or irresponsible or because of deadline issues, as Alma was saying, lack of staffing, one of the things when I was working in our weekly years ago is they got rid of our proofers. I was like, really? You know, I mean, people who proof their own stuff aren't going to see the mistake they made because you know what you meant to say, or you knew what you were thinking, and your mind is still thinking what you were thinking, and you don't see what you wrote. So there are things that have happened in the industry that is helping to cause a lot of this problem. You know, there's, like I said, lack of money to actually have the right kind of staff now. And the pressure is to be the first one to break the story. And sometimes that's always been out there, but it seems because, well, everybody's trying to beat Facebook and beat Twitter and you know, all the Instagram and all the rest of those things. A lot of the what used to be the due diligence that the reporters did is you can't even do that because if you do that, you're wasting time, and you can't get you don't get that story out first. It may be right, but you're still last, and nobody's reading it.
Right.
I don't have an answer, you know, for what's happening. I think part of what needs to be done is with elected officials and people who are in power is they need to be available to the press to talk to them. When you have something that's happening and the press is trying to get a hold of you and all they get is the no comment or that this person can't be reached at this time, that just encourages falsehood and wrong opinions. If whoever it is who wants to have the truth put out there, they have to be available to the media to tell the truth, to tell the story. You can't always blame the media for coming up with the wrong stuff if there's nobody there to confirm or deny it. So whether the legislature can do anything about that, I don't know. But there's ways to help make sure that the proper information gets out there. And then it doesn't have to be. There's always a concern that the legislature or the elected official is going to have their information. It's all going to be slanted towards their side. And it's obvious that there are party differences and people, there isn't working across the aisles back and forth on some of these things. But both of the parties and all the parties and all the people involved, they need to probably have a point person that should be there for the media to be able to contact and that the media has faith in. Because as Elmer said, all the media has or all the reporter has is their reputation. And if they report the bad things, they get nailed with that and nobody will ever talk to them. So it is a double-edged sword, very fine line that you have to walk. But I think if there was more openness and more ability for the media to be able to get the right information, you might not have quite so much false news out there. And that's where I'll stop.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. All right. And Ms. Franchek, if you could share your thoughts.
Thank you for inviting me to be part of this panel. I've been in journalism for 35 years. I moved full-time to academia in 2008, but I still continue to freelance, so I still consider myself a working journalist. I got into the academia end of things because I was heading towards the end of my career, and I wanted to make sure that the people who are coming up behind me had the right idea about their role in society. And I think that as a democratic society, journalism is critical. And we seem to have this attack that wants to undermine that foundation. And without the media reporting, our democracy is really at stake. I firmly believe that. But I'm going to turn things around here, and I'm going to say that the media is doing its job. Despite all of the challenges, the cutbacks, the changing in the business models, the financial pressures, the competition. The media, despite all of this, is doing its job. It's up to the individual. There's more work to do on the individual to make sure that they are consuming everything they need to know to be a good citizen. I found this great quote. This is from Justice Jackson in 1945. Every person must be his own watchdog of the truth, because the forefathers didn't trust the government to separate the truth from the false. In 1945, that couldn't have been more appropriate today. Because of social media, blew the delivery stream wide open. No longer do you need to own a press. No longer do you need to own a television station or own airwaves on the radio. Everybody's a journalist. I think Mike even said that. So the onus is not on journalists. Journalists just need to keep doing what they're doing, investigating, and getting to the truth, getting to the facts. It's up to the individual in society to vet what they are consuming. And that can't be a steady diet of MSNBC, and that can't be a steady diet of the Wall Street Journal, and it can't be a steady diet of the New York Times. Everybody out there, it's incumbent on every American citizen to do due diligence, to get every side of the issue, and then make up their mind about where the truth lies. As Elmer said, the journalism is populated by human beings. And anytime you have a human being involved, there's going to be a mistake made. And I certainly agree with him. In the years that I've been involved, and I've been involved primarily in print, but I certainly have friends and colleagues in radio and television, in the traditional media, not a single person went into this with an agenda or with a bias. Everybody just wants to get the facts. Everybody just wants to get the news out. But being human, you know, sometimes things are going to slip through the cracks, or maybe a mistake will be made. And that's true, and the media has called themselves out on it when that has happened. But because of the atmosphere we have now, with everybody's a journalist online, that it's really up to the individual to be diligent about what they're reading and they should and consuming, and that should be across several trains of thought. One of the things that is causing some of the pressures on media is timeliness. Now, there are several news values. I don't want to turn this into a COM 210 class that I teach at Buffalo State, but there are several things that make a news story have news value, and timeliness is one of them. If you can be first with a story, then you are going to have a good news story. And there are other things that go into it too, but timeliness is certainly an issue. So I'm disappointed to hear Felice's impressions about seeing and hearing stories that haven't been vetted, because while I understand the pressures of timeliness and I've seen journalists make mistakes, I also have heard journalists say, my editor, my news director says, don't be first if it's not right. We'd rather be second and correct than first and wrong. So I think that the people in the business appreciate that timeliness could be a landmine. But I think for the most part, journalists really try very hard to get it right before they get it first. Now, while individuals are consuming, well, I advise individuals to consume as much as they possibly can, I think they need to know a couple of things about what journalists do. Now, Mike said, and I agree with him, that you present the facts, all sides of the story. And very often there's more than two sides of the story. There may be three or four sides of the story. And you need to present those facts and let the public decide. But journalists, the ones I've known, have been the most interesting and intelligent people out there, and they are on the front lines of the issues. And so who else do you want to add some context to the issues but the people who are understanding what's happening? And I think that in addition to the facts, I think we should look to journalists to provide context so that you know what you're reading, you know what it means, you know what you're watching, you know what it means, and how it figures into democratic society. So to me, the media should keep doing what it's doing. It's the public that has to step up.
Okay, thank you. It's actually interesting. I was on Twitter, I was on everyone's favorite source for information, And a former reporter sort of had posted a meme, of course, not everyone else's favorite memes. And it was talking about journalism. And it said, you know, if one person says it's raining outside and one person says it isn't the reporter's job to share both of those opinions. It's the reporter's job to look out the window. I think there was an expletive in that part, but I won't say it. Look out the window and report what's actually happening. So while my concern is always this sort of level of equivalency, which often is a false equivalency, like this person says this person says that, it's factual that they both said that. But the presentation of that information as a balance, which I see often, and I see as a problem within journalism where, and part of it is probably because they're so taxed, the effort and energy it takes to give context, to understand a situation, first you actually have to be there, right? Like so often it's happening now, and I could even say, even in legislative chambers, someone who's reporting on say what's happening here doesn't even have the time to be here. They have to go to audio tape to review it, but then that doesn't really give you a true feeling and understanding of what's happening. You have to speak to people, you'd have to pick things apart. And it seems that the level of energy that is needed just isn't there, and it's not for lack of want to do it, it's because we have a model that doesn't allow for that often. So at least maybe three-fourths, I don't know if we're probably maybe all agreeing on the same concept, but what is the issue with disinvestment in truth-seeking in actual journalism and how it impacts, you know, the relay of public information?
Well, MIT did a very interesting study on Twitter. They specifically had a big grant, went back and traced Twitter basically back to its beginnings and went through, if you can believe it, every single tweet they get their hands on, and they found the vast majority of things were wrong. They checked everything out. They verified every single thing on Twitter, overwhelming majority. But also, when they interviewed some people and checked on them, they said that people weren't bothered by that it was wrong.
Right.
That's even more disturbing.
So that's the answer. Nobody cares. It's just...
But one of the definitions of journalism is the science of verification. And at its highest level, that's what it is quite often, figuring out what is the truth, because a lot of people will tell you a lot of things. Sometimes at basic levels, it does become he said, she said, stacking quotes, that kind of thing. But when journalism is done at its best, it does provide the background. And it does test the truth. One of the great things that has come about in the last 10 years has been fact-checking. And some politicians really hate it. Other ones not find it more useful. But when somebody is saying something, and the electronic media have a little bit more pressure on them with this, if somebody says something, how do you check it immediately? I mean, you don't know to challenge somebody and say, is that really so? Is that being cherry-picked out of a whole bunch of different anecdotes or situations? You need the time to go back and look into it, because you don't always recognize, or you don't always know if you can question something like that as it's happening. Print has a little bit more of an advantage, print, and I include online with that, because at least you usually have a little bit of time to try to check and do the background and find out if what the person is telling you is valid.
We have a question from Mr. Noah came down, wanted to ask a question on the subject. Brian, if you could sit down and go to the mic, please. I figure if someone took the time to come down here and park and
I appreciate having the time to ask a question. I have a two-part question. It has to do with the power relationship between elected officials and the media. And the second part is the ability of elected officials to almost choose the media outlets they want to interact with. You see at the federal level, the president is disparaging CNN and the Washington Post. At the state level, we had Dave Doyle, I believe his name was, testifying that confidants of the governor were trying to defund and hurt the investigative post as much as they could. And even on the local level, we have elected officials who avoid certain media outlets and seek out others. And, you know, with all the defunding in the newsrooms and less funds going to these outlets, basically the question I have is, you know, how do those power dynamics play out when you're trying to find the truth from elected officials? And it seems to me that the elected officials have some cards to play, and there's only so far journalists can go if they want access. You know, I don't know if I'm explaining myself as clearly as I'd like to, but I think that's enough for you guys to go on. I wanted to open it up to the whole panel, and full disclosure, I'm an elected official myself, so, where? You know, be honest with me in your answer.
Where?
Town of Cheektowaga.
I think power dynamic is a good description of it. I remember when I was covering local governments, there were times when I would call a county legislator about an issue, and within the next hour, two or three more would call me up because they wanted to get in their particular view on it as well, even though I hadn't reached out to them. And so they needed the media because they wanted to have their point of view on a particular issue, even if it was the same as the person I talked to. You know, everybody likes their press clips if they're good. And at the same time, there are other times when something bad happens, they are going to probably try to only talk to the people that have been covering them positively in the past. And it is a dynamic that changes. And ideally, the stand-up people will call you back one way or another. And they also have to know that if you are reporting what the other person says, if they want their side of it to be represented, they had better talk to you as well. But it's a constantly changing thing. If they feel they can get away with ignoring you, they will. If they think you're not fair, they might do that. And it was very interesting, the governor's office and their relationship with Investigative Post, because Investigative Post is a fascinating outlet, doing great work in pioneering a different financial approach to doing journalism as a nonprofit. And probably there are a lot of politicians who, when they see Investigative Post coming in the door, want to run out the back.
Well, you know, what you raise is actually a First Amendment issue. Now, the First Amendment, of course, one of the five freedoms is freedom of the press. And basically, the First Amendment, which is often misunderstood, involves with government interference. So if the government is cutting you off, the case could be made either way. It's not really government interference, just ignoring you. But on the other hand, if you can't get the information you need, the argument could be made that it's preventing you from doing your job realistically. So, you know, the other interesting thing here is Donald Trump and the Twitter thing. I'm very happy to say the federal court agreed with one of my positions in my media law class. What happened was Donald Trump, the private citizen, has a Twitter account for many, many years, of course. Well, then, of course, he ascended to the presidency. Well, he cut people off from his Twitter account. Well, and he's a private citizen, no problem, because the First Amendment deals with government interference, not with private. Private clubs can do whatever they want to, unless it's in violation of law. So now the judge agreed in that particular case with the Twitter people that, yes, it was government interference. It was cutting off their First Amendment rights to freedom of speech. And I think what you're talking about is a First Amendment right. But you got to be able to make the case. But the smart people know how to use the media, even if they don't like the media. You know, one of the things I was very happy about when I left after 20 years at Channel 2, I had several government people say to me, you know, they didn't always like the job I did because it made them feel uncomfortable, but they felt that I was fair. And I think that's what true media is all about. But unfortunately, one of the things we heard today, some of the time pressures and some of the other natures of the beast nowadays, I don't think, as my colleagues have all said here, the media is necessarily trying to be unfair, but I think just the time restraint sometimes, they just sometimes don't see some of the things in the big picture, which can be misconstrued, especially by a legislator who is unhappy.
That's fair. Okay. Ms. Franchik or Ms. Krejcik?
I would just have to say that you know, the press tries to manipulate sources, and the sources can manipulate the journalists right back. And they do that by cutting them off and not answering phone calls and calling them just after deadline. And I also recall stories where someone, not a public official in this case, but someone at a big company decided not to call me back on a big story. And I went around and talked to people around them and got the story that ran on the top of the front page at the time was paper copy. And his PR person called me the next day and said, how could you have done that? Mr. So-and-so didn't... The press moves on, moves along. You can hook your tail to that kite, or you can ignore it. But it's not going to, not going to go away. I think that in terms of the amount of work that, that journalists have to do now is tremendous. It used to be. I know that those of us who spend some time in the media, we had stories to write. We had stories to film. We had a newscast to be on. Now, everybody has all of those things to do. In addition to, you have a television reporter who's got to write a feature story about the report they just had. And then in the meantime, between, going out to cover the story and crafting this feature story, they're also tweeting and they're Instagramming and what have you. The amount of pressure on the individual journalists these days is tremendous, and it is to their credit that they're getting the stories out the way they are. But I think that a public official who is transparent that's really key. I'm not sure how much town official has an effect or local legislator. As long as you're upfront and transparent with documents, with your staff when necessary, with yourself when necessary, that transparency is really key. Try to rein that in. The story's not going to go away. It's just going to pop up in another direction. You're not probably going to enjoy it.
For the 22 years that I worked in the news media, one of the things that we used that was a tool, I guess, is that when we wound up trying to contact elected officials who did not want to answer our calls or waited until it was too late, we would actually write in the story, calls were not returned, or we tried to contact this person numerous times and were never received a response. You put that into print enough times, it winds up being that person is not happy seeing, because his constituents are saying, hey, this really looks bad, what are you hiding? And we would always try to tell them, look, if you tell us what's going on, it's going to be your verbiage, your words, that you're getting out your part of this or your side of the story. When they didn't respond, then it was almost like you could say, not that the media would, but the other people, the other side of the story, were able to get a free rein to say whatever they wanted. So that was kind of one of our tools, was didn't return phone calls, didn't respond to, we knocked on the door, nobody answered the doors. So that, again, like Mike, the other people have said, you have to be upfront. Journalists, whether it's media, radio, Twitter, whatever it is, they're doing their best to try to give you your time to give your side of the story. That you choose not to respond, it is a free choice. But then, as was said earlier, you may not like what comes out because the story isn't going to go away.
Yeah, I often warn people that no comment is indeed a comment, because in the public perception, if you say no comment, they have the perception that you have something to hide.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I always say, it's better to say something that says nothing than not say anything at all. In fact, Tim O'Brien, the former ABC reporter who covered the Supreme Court for many years, he used to always say, oh, you media touch, you edit everything down. He says, well, you know what? Write up something that lasts for 30 seconds and then say nothing more. Walk off and say thank you very much, like Elvis would say. And that's exactly what it's all about, because people will take what they want to take from the thing. And hiding in the woods is not going to do it. But exactly right, the paper trail, in fact, that's what I tell my students. Not only should you acknowledge that someone didn't respond to you, but you should also show you made an effort to contact them multiple times. Because one little email is not going to cut it. My own case, for example, when I want to teach at SUNY Fredonia, somebody sends me an email, In the fall schedule, I have 4 classes, I have a faculty meeting, and I have some other commitments, office hours and whatnot. I may not see an email to the end of the day, and sometimes that's the case with people who are in business. You know, they're in meetings all day long, going around the company and whatnot, so that's the point. You issue the paper trail of what you did. You know, we contacted them multiple times, we called, whatever, and then they blew us off to show people that you did make an honest effort as a journalist to get the story.
And you were fair to the
source,
too.
For sure.
Thank you, Brian, for coming in and giving questions. So I wanted to address a few of the questions. Like I said, I've sort of just picked ones that sort of asked the same thing, which happened over and over again. I picked 3, and I think that's what we'll basically have time for. And anyone feel free to jump in and answer, and we'll go around the room. So here is a question from a supporter of the president. The mainstream media is pushing an agenda. They will show 10-second clips of Trump and then fill in the rest to further their agenda. Why not report the facts and let the people decide for themselves? I know we've sort of talked on that, but as we've sort of talked about this growing divide in opinion journalism that Mike had addressed, where if people don't have faith in the information that they're getting because they believe this, where do they go to find objective journalism? Where if they don't have faith in CNN or Fox News or MSNBC or really the 24-hour channels, and then then they don't have faith in ABC, NBC, CBS, they don't have faith in the Buffalo News, they don't have faith in any of these organizations anymore, where can they find the most objective journalism where you could say, well wait a minute, this isn't a 10-second clip of the president saying something to make him look bad. These are facts. This is the whole scope of it. Do people feel that they don't have access to that? You know, where can they go if they don't want a structured sharing of that information in that way? Where do they go to get that objective information from?
Well, if I can jump in,
sure.
I think that my marching orders to the public stand here. They need to consume several different sources of information and then draw their own conclusions, see where the contradictions are, see where the conflicts are. But I just find that prevailing attitude to be really curious in a society, in a situation, in a nation, rather, where most all of the media is owned by 6 or 7 companies. So why would those 6 or 7 companies, they're big corporations, have an agenda that would be against the guy who is in their ballpark? It was batting for them. It doesn't make any sense. If you're looking at it that way, that the media is against Trump, well, who owns the media? And if there's an agenda, wouldn't it be a pro-corporate agenda? Wouldn't it be a pro-Trump agenda? So I would like the people who are talking about fake news and they're talking about mainstream media and how bad it is, think about it a little bit, where this mainstream media is coming from and whether it makes sense what they're saying.
A lot of people don't realize that the media, whether it's a newspaper, radio station, television station, is owned by somebody. And it normally winds up that whoever owns that particular production has their own agenda, whether they're Republican, conservative, Democrat, liberal, if you even use that term anymore. You know, it used to be when there were different newspapers, like a morning paper and an afternoon paper, and they were owned by different people. Everybody bought both papers, and they read both papers. And then they figured reality is in the middle here, because one was usually very conservative and the other one was more liberal. And everybody wanted those, because it was a balance then. You got both sides of the story. And whether or not you wanted to agree with either one of them, you know, you was at least getting the information from two different sides. What happens now is you have one, and you have one person owning all the outlets. Well, then you get that one person's, you know, viewpoint. Not that the reporters are doing it, you know, that they're all conservative or Democrat or Republican or whatever, but you got to remember, whoever's driving the bus has the final say.
So that's pretty much what the other two questions are basically on those topics. One of them was,
who owns the media, who ultimately has a say in what goes into publication. And then the other was based on independent nonprofit journalism, you know, PBS and NPR and their role. And this person had addressed Trump's proposed funding cuts to PBS and NPR. I'm not going to just read the questions because they're all three of those are just part of this conversation. So following up on that, so who owns media outlets? Do they come down on editors and editors then come down on reporters who have to create an agenda? And then what is the role of public funding for news, for fact-based news that, you know, has integrity? I'll open that up. I mean, just to please continue your thoughts with that, and then we'll kind of, I think we'll just work around all those issues.
Well, it's actually worse than Anne-Marie identified, because actually there are five corporations that own, I think it's closer to 85 to 90% or thereabouts of the American media, and two of them are the same company. CBS and Viacom is the same basic company that was split into two to give greater shareholder value, and now they're talking to get it back. And now Disney, of course, is trying to acquire many of the Fox properties, so we'll be down to four thereabouts. The good thing is there are enough sources of independent media that you can go to. And when that discussion that I mentioned earlier about the sources, the confidential sources, when Senator Dianne Feinstein did not want to recognize anybody other than the mainstream media, CBS, CNN, and so on, there were many, many, you know, even the Drudge Report, as far as it goes, for all its sins and whatnot, it is a good source of other information. And I think that's the thing. The public traditionally has gotten used to whoever their favorite media is. But if you tool around and go a little further into a Google search, you're going to find lots and lots of sources that will give you the great scoop. But Anne-Marie's got it right. You have to go and do around and tool around, because a lot of times, even though it's many different media outlets, it's owned by the same corporation. And the worst example of this is when the Sinclair stations all around the country, they all read the statement in unison. And it was funny on social media when someone put all the anchors together talking and reading the same statement at the same time, like one of these, you know, Where's Waldo puzzles there. It was very, very interesting and very, very funny, but very, very true as well.
Isn't it exhausting for people, you know, people are working more hours, they're getting, you know, their wages have flattened over the last 30 years. You know, you have two people in the household working if it's two parents and children. I know me and my wife are pulled at both ends. You know, we're running kids to the soccer camp. No, the kids you can't just send them outside to play anymore. I mean, how much time do people have to, like, you know, go through the news to examine everything? I mean, you know, there's no, you know, Cronkite anymore or a Murrow where you just go, you know, this guy is a professional, you know, he's going to share the information based on his own integrity, and you're going to believe what he's saying more or less. Where everything going back to the public, and sure, we should all be civically engaged, and at some point in this country, we probably were. But how hard is that? Like, how realistic is that when people are just exhausted? You know, people are just pulled in multitasking. The same problems that reporters have of multitasking and making mistakes because they have deadlines and pressure and all this, everybody else has too. Everybody's just beat. And so how do they then, you know, instead of being entertained by their news, or how do we take every person to be, you know, at the height of civics and start challenging everything they read and challenging their own biases, basically the things that reporters have to do? You're actually kind of saying that the people have to be their own reporters to filter through false information. Is that a realistic? I mean, it almost seems like there's. It sounds like that there's no way that that's going to happen, and we are in real trouble.
There's actually a sort of a media map. I'm trying to remember who put it out. It may have been Pointer, which is a news nonprofit study operation out of Florida. And it essentially analyzes the media and puts together a map for what is more centrist, what is more partisan, and the mainstream media that skew a little bit left, like CNN, New York Times, things that skew further right, like Fox. But then it has things like Cos or, say, The Nation, which take the news that's reported by the mainstream media and interpret it, and that'll be further this way, and Breitbart will be somewhere down in the lower corner because they take the what's reported by the mainstream media and then do their interpretations of it. So things like that are out there, and you probably are going to find at least a number of sources that you trust. Once you find a source that you trust, and a few of them so you can compare what's being reported, that's not necessarily a huge chore to do that. You know, as long as you find the different voices and you differentiate. I think a lot of it comes down to remembering to differentiate between opinion and news. Fox News's reporting is not terribly partisan. It's probably partisan to some degree, but the commentators, the people giving their opinions, are very, very partisan. Same thing with CNN. The reporting is not necessarily partisan. Probably the commentators, they do skew to the left. And just remembering to keep track of what is opinion, what is news, and just take a look at the facts. And whenever you see something pulled out of context, see if you can go back to the original source and find out where it came from. Because quite often there are quotes that just seem outrageous, and maybe they are outrageous, but maybe they were just part of something that was a bigger thing and was taken out of context, maybe even the meaning reversed, depending on how it was stated. So those are a few approaches you can take to managing your media intake and trying to find some truth.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.